Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information. I'm curious, like, how your relationship is when it comes to competing against another person versus how you compete against yourself.
Oh, comparison.
Comparison. Our good friend.
I think it used to be way worse for me. Everything had to be a competition. And I think that was because I was like just sitting in
stone cold Capricorn.
I was sitting in some unresolved trauma that I had not worked through or healed at all. So it was like, well, if I compete and I'm better, then that validates my existence and blah, 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 all of that. Right. I can happily report now I can go swim laps in the pool and I'm not racing against the person next to me. You know what I mean?
Unless it's Ryan Lochte.
Well, then I would lose because there's no
way.
No, then I would do the like Wednesday Addams thing where I like pretend.
Put piranhas in the pool?
Not piranhas. No, I mean from the movie.
Oh.
I'll be the victim all your life.
Exactly.
Where I'm like, oh, I need, I'm, oh, God.
Help.
I need
I'm
a
drowning.
Rescue.
Help.
Drowning.
Drowning. Help, I'm dying.
Is that what she says?
That's what she says.
Oh, God, that's so funny.
I can't
swim. So that Ryan Lochte could save me, right? Maybe he's, that.
Yeah.
But I think by nature, just generally a competitive person, but I'm better at understanding when things don't need to be competitive, right? I understand people who are competitive because I am one. Like when it's like there's formality around it and there's competition, like I am all in. Like don't come for me because I'm going to leave everybody in the dust. You know what I mean? Like, because that's just me. But I'm way better now at like not making things that are not and never been ever going to be competitions. What about for you?
I think I had some early disappointments when I thought I was set up to be like in a space where there was like, oh, you're a surefire shoo-in for this, or this is like where other people were like, this is going to be your thing. And so after those like soul-crushing defeats, I just have stopped wanting to compete against other people. So that's my own trauma. I love that our show is also a trauma-based show.
I mean, honestly. What it is to be queer in America.
Seriously. Trauma and shame, everybody.
That's it.
Welcome to our friends, Trauma and Shame. But yeah, so I feel like now I only sort of kind of, like I'm trying to think of like what I would compete against other people in at this moment in time. I also think having been practicing yoga for a while, doing that, you're not competing against anyone. Like there's nothing competition based in that, like physical and mental activity.
But did you have to like let go of some of that? Was there ever a point in time where you're like, oh, their downward dog is slightly more than
mine. I
think
initially, but it's like, it's really just about you in the practice. It's not about comparison. So I think that...
Right, but I'm saying like, did you have to shed some of that?
I think initially, yes. Okay. But I think that now it's just more of like uplifting for anybody that might be having trouble and trying to be uplifting for myself when I'm having difficulty with a specific posture and not making it a beat yourself up sort of situation. Not like downtrodden, not feeling downtrodden and defeated about it. So I do feel like there's definitely a lot of, I think initially early on, I was more competitive like in high school and college. And then I've just sort of tried to let a lot of that go because I found that it didn't serve me and it often led to disappointment. So that's tied into my expectation thing. So I feel like the only person that I compete with is me. And that's just towards betterment.
And you have played group games with other people, right? Do you have awareness of yourself in a group game setting?
That's the... Okay. So the receipts are coming out.
The receipts are coming out. Because you're all over there. You're like, I only compete against myself now. Well, I only eat organic. And I only eat artisanal
breads. I did
breads.
Sound a little like, you
did
know.
Sound a little woo-woo for that. But
I wish you well.
I have... absolutely.
That was a little goopy. I did get a little goopy there for a second.
The goop church of Gwyneth Paltrow herself. That is exactly what you sounded like. Uh-huh. So let's be real. I mean, you've played Jeopardy.
Oh, yeah.
In group settings with you.
And Salad Bowl, too. Yeah. You and I, and let's talk about who's shed competition. Because when we're on separate Salad Bowl teams, it is like the claws come out for each other.
Especially when it's like...
Our team is going to win.
Well, especially when it's like, oh, you didn't get that under the buzzer. No, you didn't. And so then it's like, that's fine. So when that comes back around you, we will not have the same generosity shown toward you that you did not show toward us, good Samaritan.
Yep.
I'm looking for adventure. I want to follow on the trail or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky. Don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done. And the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real. You can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national parks.
Father, you'll follow you there.
At the national parks.
Father, you'll follow you there.
At the national parks.
Follow you.
I'll follow you there.
We would like to acknowledge that while hiking and visiting the land also known as Indiana Dunes National Park, that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Kickapoo, Peoria, Kaskaskia, Potawatomi, and Miamia people.
Okay, so if you joined us in our last episode, we were hiking in Indiana's Sand Dunes State Park, which is nestled directly inside of the national park. The national park actually sort of encapsulates it. So it's sort of like a little donut hole inside of the national park.
Yeah.
Minus the shoreline, which is occupied also by the state park.
Right. Yeah. So it's kind of like the national park is the letter C and the state park is the negative space inside the C.
Great.
If we want to, you know, override your analogy, metaphor.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't saying override, but now who's making it a competition? There you are.
We had hiked the 9, 10, and 2 trails, which are in the eastern portion of the park. And this was the larger section of the dune field within the park, and definitely the section of the park that took longer. And we could see that just by looking at the map. So it's what we really wanted to start with so that we had more time for other things that day as well.
We'd started hiking at about 7 a.m. in this section, and we'd finished at about 10 a.m. So we'd spent about 3 hours total in the park so far to do one of the larger sections. So at this point, we were able to stop by the car and regroup a little bit. The trail dumped us right back into the parking lot where we started, where the car was. While we were there, we took some time to stretch and then assess what we wanted to do next, not just in the state park, but also start to proceed into the area of the national park as well in this afternoon.
Right, because we had 2 days kind of slated for the dunes, and we knew that the smaller section probably wasn't going to take us nearly as long as we had hiked when we had hiked the longer section, and that was going to allow us some time to do some stuff in the national park also that day. Because we, if nothing else, are people who pack it in to make sure we're getting our worthwhile out of a day.
We mentioned, right, about you burning your hand last episode, right? Or did we
No,
not?
It hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened yet?
No, it was this evening.
I thought it
evening.
Happened the night before.
No, it was this evening.
Okay, so stay tuned. You've heard us talk about it out of order. Now you're going to hear the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so as the trails went, we only had this small section of the northwest corner of the park to complete, which was labeled the Three Dune Challenge. And on the map, it mostly consists of Trail 8, and then the return was Trail 4.
This section of trail also allowed for the possibility of connecting back to the trail that runs along the beach, the 10, which we had already really spent some time on when we had done the 9, 10, and 2 trail earlier that morning. So we didn't really want to necessarily head back that way for the lake. And there was also the option to just kind of double back once you hit the end of the Dune Challenge and just kind of loop back on the 8. But that's not exactly what the Dune Challenge is all about.
Right. So what exactly is the Dune Challenge and what is it all about? It is the hike on the 3 tallest dunes within the state park, which also happen to be taller than what is often thought to be the tallest dune on the lake shore, Mount Baldy, which is located within the national park.
The trail is pretty exact as far as what to follow, and most people start from the Nature Center, which is where we park, and head up the 8 trail. We actually started on the 7 trail just to kind of see what that was like, which also leaves right from this point, and then jumped over to the 8.
Okay, so there are 3 dunes, hence the name, but the way it is set up is that we would start at Mount Jackson, climb up to Mount Holden, and then finally finish on the tallest one, which is Mount Tom, before winding our way back to the parking lot of the campsite and back essentially to the Nature Center Trail to the starting point and therefore make a giant circle.
And as I said before, from Mount Tom, which is our tallest dune, you could backtrack, head down the 8, and then go down the 7, which does connect up to the 8 trail a little further up too. Or you could head out to the shore of Lake Michigan from Mount Tom and hook up with the 10 trails and all the trails on the eastern side of the park. But the challenge itself exists as a loop. So this is sort of part of the reason we wanted to keep it separate and try to start in most of the time where most people start as well.
So part of the challenge of this 3 dune challenge is timing yourself and then comparing it to your friends or your family or whomever else you're hiking with. And if you're a local and you hike in the park all the time, then you can compare it against your own hike and what your time was before or after that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't seen these sort of challenges everywhere, but I did when I was hiking on a trip solo the summer before we started traveling together in Vancouver. There is a hike called the Grouse Grind, which is up Grouse Mountain.
That's what I call my the hustle and bustle of my everyday.
Uh-huh, the Grouse Grind.
The Grouse Grind. Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun to do this. This was something I was in Vancouver on this was the first time I had gone to the Pacific Northwest in 2015, and Vancouver was my first stop, and then Seattle, and this is where I experienced Olympic National Park and Rainier for the first time, and then also Portland and San Francisco. I had heard about this in Vancouver because I had done a lot of different things here and wanted to get some hiking in. Essentially, it's about a half a mile straight up for the most part, and it's very, very steep. There are 2,830 steps in this hike, which brings you to an incredible viewpoint at the top. But I remember when I was hiking that this was something that locals did on the regular. I just was like, wow, because I was in my early 30s when I did this, and before we had really started hiking together a lot, and before I had really come to hiking as a thing that I was doing, you know, more and more, and it definitely kicked my butt. The goal, the competition factor of the Grouse Grind is to try to get from the base to the top in under an hour, I'm pretty sure. But definitely don't let that be the thing that is your ultimate driver, just like we weren't timing ourselves on the 3 Dune Challenge. You got to keep your health and safety in mind anytime you're doing something like this. The beautiful thing I remember about this, not that this is a podcast about the Grouse Grind or hiking in Vancouver, but
also I feel like, you know, for those who may have experience with this, there's an interesting comparison here.
But if you don't have a car, you have to take a ferry and a bus, and I believe the subway, to kind of get out there, because this is a very popular hike. It's very easy to get to using public transportation, so win for the environment there. The one other thing I'll say, and the one thing I didn't see when we were on the 3 Dune Challenge, is that on the Grouse Grind, people run up this, and I was like, absolutely not, no thanks. Good for you, but not for me.
Oh, Lord, no.
Trail runners, you are living in your own world, and I give you a lot of credit, but I also don't understand you.
No. Yeah. That is the level of commitment and I don't know, like I just feel like that's not loving yourself.
Yeah. I just want you to know that you're loved no matter what.
You
don't
are
have to run trails.
Trail runners, you are loved no matter what. We got two queers here that love you deeply. You do not have to trail run. Again, unless that truly brings you joy.
Yeah.
So back on the Three Dune Challenge, we started our ascent up Mount Jackson. Now, they're called mounts, y'all, right, but they are sand dunes.
Yeah.
They're just tall. And this is not like sand dunes in like
the beach,
the Great Sand Dunes National yeah. Park, where it's like just sand. It's like there are trees about.
Yes.
And there are it's like sand among forests.
I think this is why it's considered a mountain, too.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is the shortest of the mountains on the Three Dune Challenge, but good God,
mm-hmm.
this was tough.
Yeah.
Okay. Hiking in sand is tough.
Yes.
And we weren't doing a lot of uphill climbing through the dunes while we were on the first part of our day, but now we were.
Yeah.
We fully were. How were you feeling?
I just remember feeling like it was like moving through molasses. Like we did trudge a little bit through, like when we were at the beach house blowout earlier this day, we did have some like climbing to do. It definitely felt exhaustive. And this just was like another level of tiring because the sand here was loose and it definitely made it more difficult to climb. What about you?
This was extremely tiring. The other thing I remember at this time was, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, I had gotten shoes specifically for hiking in sand and made the wrong call about these shoes.
Oh, were these the Chacos?
No, I don't own those.
You did own Chacos when we went to Hawaii.
Oh, I don't, maybe it was them. Maybe I had used the ones from Hawaii on this trip.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I did.
Yeah, it was not good for you though.
It was not good.
It was like the, the annoyance factor, like I've never seen you more aggravated about a footwear choice.
Yeah.
Because it just was like, these shoes are filling up with sand and it's not doing what it should be. And it was, the drama was in high.
The drama was real.
It was high-spirited drama happening there.
Well, mm-hmm. I have a degree in drama.
It's true.
What can I say?
Mm-hmm. So we didn't start going up the 8 trail. We started up the 7, which is parallel to the 8. And I'm glad we did because it kind of gave us a little bit of taste for what that was like. There were a lot of trees here on the 7 trail and a decent canopy that hung over the trail, almost the entirety of it, as we had gotten up to the 8 where we met up. The day was essentially gray and cloudy and humid when we started hiking in the eastern portion of the park. And now it was bright and sunny, super warm, and still very humid at this point.
I think we had both sweat out any water that we had consumed.
Oh, absolutely.
Already?
Yeah.
It really is kind of cool and amazing to see the green forest on either side. I was consistently in awe at how green Indiana sand dunes was.
Yeah.
So it is wild to think about how that kind of vegetation can survive and thrive in sandy conditions.
I mean, like trees. These are trees. Yeah.
Real big trees.
After hiking up for a bit, we eventually see what is our cutoff trail, which brings us on to the 8 trail. And this is much more of a dense wood, this little cutoff here. But we really aren't. This is a blip. We weren't here for that long when we were hiking here. And when we hit the 8 trail, this is where things start to get really, really tough.
Yes. While the sand was really loose on the 7 trail, the 8 trail was a whole other level of loose. This was like, I remember taking steps and it's like burying your foot in sand as we were doing it. And this is where it really did feel like taking one step forward and 10 steps back. Like
absolutely
every single step.
Mm-hmm. The trail is a lot more open. So we had all of that dense canopy when we were first starting on the 7 and the cutoff trail across. But now, and what sort of becomes a constant on this dune challenge is that as we started to approach the spots where we were headed towards the top, things started to open up a little bit more. And honestly, I think the word that sponsors this episode is trudge. Mm-hmm. It felt like we were climbing through, like the best thing I can equate to is like really thick mashed potatoes, or maybe that's what I'm just craving right now.
Mashed potatoes is a great way to describe it. Also, like, I mean, it's literally trudging through sand.
Yeah. Uphill.
Uphill.
Yeah.
So right.
Mm-hmm.
I think I found, if we're going to compare.
Yeah.
I think I found Great Sand Dunes sand to be a little bit easier.
Mm.
This was harder.
Yeah.
There was a family behind us as we were approaching the summit of Mount Jackson, and they were talking about trying to beat their time. They were really working hard to try and beat their time. Yeah. They were like really huffing it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, go around us.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Yeah.
We're not doing that today.
Mm-mm.
Obviously. I mean, it was lovely to chat with them for a moment.
Yeah,
they were
very
friendly people.
But then they shoved us down and kept working. So they stopped being so friendly.
Yes. They tossed pearls into our path so that we could trip and fall.
Uh-huh. Pearls.
Like Nomi Malone and Showgirls. Getting to the top of Mount Jackson, there is a vertical post with the name of the peak and its height, like scrawled into it, as well as a newer sign that had other, you know, interpretive information about the height and the angle of the grade and the namesake for the peak and all of that kind of stuff.
So Mount Jackson is 176 feet tall. The grade of the slope of the dune is 31 degrees, and there are 32 million cubic feet of sand within the dune. That's some wild stuff
wild.
Right now.
Mm-hmm.
There is a bench beyond the sign here, which offered a lovely view and a moment of rest should you want it. We definitely took it. We took a breather for a moment here before we began to trudge forth again. And with that, let's take our first break.
Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners.
All right, so we are playing adjective, noun, verb. If you're joining us for the first time with this game, we're going to give each other clues that create a short three-word sentence that goes in the order of an adjective, a noun, and a verb. And to make it spicier, it's alliterative. So
it's alliterative.
Alliterative. Mm-hmm.
Or as they'd say in the UK, alliterative.
Alliterative. Great.
Okay, I'll start with mine.
Okay.
Cordial nymphs escaping. Cordial and pleasant and acquaintance-like.
Friendly fairies freeing. Friendly fairies fleeing.
There you go. Friendly fairies fleeing.
All right. Kind and caring, long-necked animals found in Africa making guttural noises from their throats.
Is it generous giraffes guffawing?
I'll take it is giraffes. It's okay. Gentle giraffes growling.
Oh, growling.
Guffawing though. I like that. To guffaw. Yeah.
I was thinking like belching, but I knew that wasn't. Yeah. Okay. Slow and relaxed ring-tailed primates slowly failing.
Slow and relaxed ring-tailed primates
slowly failing and not achieving their goal. I used a couple of $5 words here.
Is raccoons one of them? No. Oh, primates. Sorry. Primates.
Ring-tailed
primates.
It's a ring-tailed this.
Lemur.
There you go.
Okay, lazy lemurs.
Slow and relaxed. Think of a $5 word.
Lackadaisical lemurs.
No, no. Even more.
Loquacious.
No, that's no, talkative.
I know, that's wordy. Yeah,
that's talkative.
Laissez-faire lemurs.
No.
I don't know.
Do you know this? Do you know the verb?
Lapsing.
No, like slowly not making its goal.
Losing.
We were going for languid.
Ah.
Lemurs languishing.
Oh, look at the that you had. That. You had all.
That's right.
Okay. Well, it could have been like, I had another L word that was good and it just went out of my head. Okay, great. All right. Tripping, clumsy animals that hop, found in the outback, who are using their legs to defend themselves.
What is klutzy kangaroos kicking?
There you go. And that's adjective, noun, verb. Before we take a look at hiking from Mount Jackson to Mount Holden, I think it's worth kind of diving in to think about what it's like to hike in sand and what it does to your body, because there are some things that are a little different from just hiking on solid ground. So clearly, if one is doing a hike like this, you're signing up for a ton of work by way of hiking in sand. But how does sand equate to other surfaces, and what sort of benefits or increased resistance are you signing yourself up for?
Okay, so let's do a little bit of comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when we hiked in the Grand Lake section of Rocky Mountain National Park, we did some snowshoe hiking within this park. It was April. It was early April.
Yeah.
There was still snow all over in the Grand Lake section. And we were out in snowshoes all day.
Yeah.
And when we came back, it was funny because it was like, it didn't hit us until we had to walk up the stairs to the room where we were staying in this inn at this, it was an inn at a tavern.
Yeah.
We got upstairs and were thoroughly wiped out. I was like, why can I not walk up a flight of stairs right now? Like, it really did not, like, I remember getting back to the car and being like, oh, great. Like, I'm feeling that. That was like, we had a long day. That was a good day, blah, blah, blah. We get in the car and then we get all the way back up and we were spent.
Mm-hmm.
We could barely get back down the stairs to go get dinner later.
Oh, it was bad. So we had to do some research because, like, why are we so tired? And it turns out that if you're snowshoe hiking, you can burn up to 1,000 calories an hour, which really underscored what it was like to exert ourselves and why we were feeling so tired when we visited Colorado. Also, Hafe. but Hafe seriously,
wait. We gotta. For those who don't know what Hafe is,
it's high altitude induced flatulence.
No. It's high. It's HAFE.
Oh, that's right.
It's high altitude flatulence expulsion.
That's right.
That's Hafe. Mm-hmm. That means you fart more when you're in Colorado because you're in higher altitude. Because we were farting constantly.
It was bad.
Bad.
Uh-huh,
bad farts.
Bad.
Elevation farts.
So we like
because the farts were elevated.
Oh yeah. They were more noble farts. There were noble gases. That's
they
a dad joke.
They were noble gases.
One.
Yeah.
A dad science joke. But we were like in calorie deficit through the following week because of that, you know?
Yeah.
Like that was like a surprise. And neither of us have done snowshoe hiking after that point, but I would definitely do it again. But we definitely hadn't done it before that. So our bodies were in for a little bit of a shock.
So let's compare. So when it comes to sand hiking, one can burn about 600 calories an hour, which compares to about 210 to 360 calories one might lose from normal walking on a flat surface. So that measurement, 600 calories, seems low when it comes to hiking up dunes. And I feel like somehow it must be in the same like snowshoe category number, but alas, no, it's not. It did feel similarly though.
Aside from burning calories, sand walking and hiking, especially when you're barefoot, can be beneficial to your feet. Sand provides resistance and it helps to strengthen your leg muscles, your arches, and your ankles, which, you know, you need none of because your calves are like, you know, statuesque.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I take that as a compliment. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do put up a lot of photos of my calves
for only
on
calves.
The Instagram page, which is just doubling as my only calves page. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when sand hiking, feet go through their full range of motion from flexion to extension. When you step into stand and your muscles need to work extra hard to push forward.
When it comes to barefoot walking in the sand, there are some physiological benefits to the practice of walking or hiking barefoot, which include activating your venous and lymphatic circulation, giving your feet a free massage, who doesn't love that, and helping you to feel more relaxed, grounded, and at ease.
So earthing or grounding, which is just another term for walking barefoot. Mm-hmm. All right.
As
but
you
this
roll
is
your
like
eyes
back
there.
To your woo-woo uh-huh. from before. Mm-hmm. Or I'm just going to go out and do some earthing. I wish you well. So studies have shown that walking barefoot on the ground can help normalize your cortisol rhythm, reduce pain, reduce stress, and help you to switch from your sympathetic to parasympathetic nervous system, among other things.
So yeah, there's a lot of benefits to walking in the sand.
A lot.
And hiking in the sand. And as we were hiking, we noticed, especially as we were at the top of Mount Jackson, there were so many people coming up behind us that were not wearing shoes. Having grown up on the beach, you and I can say the same things, although our beach sands are drastically different. The Gulf Coast sand is different from the Jersey Shore sand.
It's very different.
But it's definitely one of my favorite things in the summer is to just dig my feet into the sand. And to feel that energy kind of connection to the beach and to nature, like sitting too at the shoreline and having the water like just kind of erode your feet into the sand is just, there's something very calming about that. So there is something to the woo-woo of it all. So
I mean,
get the hell out of here with your
you
disparaging remarks over there.
You do love being eroded.
I do.
We give everybody who was hiking barefoot on this day so much credit. It's so funny, like I don't think either of us in that moment went, we could hike barefoot Mm-mm. and take our shoes
well,
off.
Well, after the drama of your terrible shoes, you were like, no.
That's not what I sound mm-hmm. like, but okay. Mm-hmm. It was a lot worse than that, for the record. So if you're going to impersonate me, then you have to go for it. Mm-hmm. You were in boots. I was not.
Yeah.
And you were succeeding in boots.
I was.
And I was not succeeding in what I had going on.
Mm-mm. After taking some time at the summit of Mount Jackson, we both caught our breath and looked over the overlook, which was incredibly lovely. A lot of trees. Again, we are in dunes, but it's forested. So we used a lot of green, some of the lake. We then decided to kind of continue on and make our way to Mount Holden. So from the summit of Mount Jackson, which was really clear, we had to duck back into more of a wooded pathway, which was actually really nice because at this point in the day, we're getting closer to noon and the sun is shining very brightly and it's warm.
So the trudge feels a little less awful, considering we weren't gaining a terrible amount of elevation from one peak to the next. The problem here, though, wasn't the elevation. It was the grade that we had to traverse up.
So the section between the two dunes is not nearly as long as the section from the parking lot area to the top of Mount Jackson. As we hiked the trail, the tree overhang sort of became much lower onto the trail, and it felt as though you could reach up and touch the canopy of trees at certain parts.
And there was lots of trees and lots of green here, just like in the original hike, but a little less sunlight until we get a little closer to the summit, where the dune becomes more bald and a little more open. As we make our final push to the top, this is where a lot of major grunt work happens. Mm-hmm. We have to sort of climb out of this lower area, which is surrounded by trees, and we eventually make it all the way up to the flatness that is the top of the summit. And this was like shredding your core constantly.
Yeah.
Get ready.
Yeah. There were initially some views through the tree line here that allowed you to see a sliver of the lake over the tops of a lot of green trees, sort of like what it was like at the top of Mount Jackson. The marker and sign for Mount Holden is a little farther away from when you kind of climb up out of the incline, but there were other viewpoints from just coming up to the flat part here that were to be had, which were worth it. Reaching the sign, we find that Mount Holden is 184 feet above Lake Michigan, that the slope here is a little bit more intense, which is 38 degrees of a grade, and there is about 53 million cubic feet of sand in this dune. The peak itself was named after the first president of the Prairie Club, Charles Holden, an important club in the preservation in the dunes themselves, which we'll learn about a little bit more in just a bit. But let's go ahead and take our second break.
Hey everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year, and so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about, we're marking them up, and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them, and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage
Souvenir.
Souvenir. So, who is Souvenir?
Who is Souvenir? Well, okay, I do feel like she falls into two possible camps, and maybe it's both.
She could have both.
She could be a dental queen.
She could.
Certainly. But she could also be like, actually, no. You know what? No, sorry. I'm clear. I'm so excited. I'm knocking over the mic.
Apparently.
I think she's all doing it again.
Mm-hmm. Stop using your hands.
I think she, I can't, I'm gay. Mm-hmm. That's what we do.
And partly Italian.
I think she might create sustainable looks from little souvenir tchotchkes that have been thrown into the garbage.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Okay.
She's entirely a sustainable queen.
She's a tchotchke
in the way,
queen.
In the way that, like, right, Patagonia has many, many looks that are made from recycled materials or found materials or garbage, right?
Right.
Like, that has been reclaimed and, like, turned into fashion. So I feel like that might be what she does.
Joni loves tchotchkes.
Joni loves tchotchkes. That could be the name of her show.
Mm-hmm.
Starring Souvenir.
Mm-hmm.
Joni loves tchotchkes.
I do. I like that.
Okay, so speaking of tchotchkes, like, what kind of looks would Souvenir serve based on some like souvenir tchotchkes that we know?
Like a Hummel figurine, like necklaces and
Hummel.
Yeah, the little like ceramic figurines. You never saw those?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I guess so. Are those in souvenir shops?
Well, I mean, they're considered to be a tchotchke. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think we're going broadly with tchotchke.
I feel like she's got like a puka shell necklace look.
Okay.
Where it's like all
dress
puka shells.
Is all puka shells.
Something like that.
I feel like she has also a your license plate name from this state like dress.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. License plate name, right, with your name on it and the
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. I also think she could do a whole look based on like used glow sticks.
Oh, okay.
I feel like those are always in souvenir shops.
Okay, yeah.
Right? And they're like, and they come in that like Mylar plastic that could also be interesting in fashion.
Sure, I'm sure that could be like the sew-between. I feel like it would be a very scandalous sort of look.
Oh.
A lot of skin happening there.
I mean, yeah, it could be a nude illusion.
Nude illusion.
It could be.
Yeah.
Okay, great. What other kinds of looks does she turn?
I'm trying to think of what else I'm thinking about from
souvenir
shops.
Think about all the things you hate about souvenir shops.
Everything.
I know you do. You hate everything. You know what I would like to see her do is sort of like, you know those t-shirts where it's like wolves, like from different angles are sort of like aggressively masculine, like make it and take it and make it like aggressively feminine.
Sure. Maybe she's taking old t-shirts from souvenir shops and making them into rag rugs. Like weaving them into rag rugs.
But it's like a rag rug gown.
Sure, it could be a gown. But I think she could also sell just the rug too.
I mean, yeah.
Or
she could sell
the rug,
rugs.
could like just pick it off the floor and it becomes a
Or is that like her red carpet entrance?
Right.
Options.
Mm-hmm. What song does she sing?
I feel like she's
These are a few
do.
Of my favorite things.
That's a great one. Mm-hmm. I think maybe also Cruel Summer.
Oh, Bananarama.
Bananarama.
Mm-hmm.
I could see her doing that. Mm-hmm. I could also see her doing Vacation.
Oh, All I Ever Wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Have to Get Away.
I love it.
That's right, everybody.
So,
Souvenir.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Souvenir.
So it's worth noting that the dunes themselves may not have been preserved were it not for the Prairie Club of Chicago. The dunes became a respite for Chicagoans in the early 1900s as rail travel made access to the dunes even easier.
Indiana Dunes State and National Parks became a magnet for day trippers and long-haul campers alike, but they were not the only dunes on Lake Michigan that were of interest to weekenders. Michigan City Lakefront and Miller Beach, which is in East Gary, Indiana, were just as popular as Waverly and Porter Beach, now the park.
The problems that befell the dunes were not necessarily the weekenders and the day trippers, but the industries that moved in along the lakeshore, which you can still see.
It's wild. Yeah. Not only was sand being industrially mined, but steelworks were also being erected along the lakeshore. Anyone who has been to the park, whether from driving in or around it, or walking the shoreline, can see the impacts of industry a few miles down the shore.
Having adopted what is now the National and State Parkland as their home base for Lake Michigan Leisure, the Prairie Club built a beach house for its members in 1913.
Other rough cottages and tents were erected during the summers at the park as housing for members who were staying at the dunes.
The recreational draw of the dunes did not begin with the Prairie Club, however, as residents of the area nearby found the dunes to be an incredible draw for both leisure and as a moneymaker for those enjoying the dunes.
However, the Prairie Club is sort of what gave the fight for the dunes themselves as a national park space its teeth.
In 1913, the club formed a conservation committee to establish the dunes as parkland. This garnered the attention of Stephen Mather, the first director of the NPS, who held the public hearings on behalf of the dunes.
In 1917, a National Dune Park Association formed, which helped to further promote the cause of the dunes becoming national park space.
And as the U.S. entered into World War I, the crusade to save the dunes was put on the back burner. A popular slogan in the early days of fighting for the dunes as a national park was, "Save the dunes." As the country entered the war, the slogan became, "First save the country, then save the dunes."
The fight for the protection of the dunes was not all in vain, though, as in 1926, 10 years after a push for the national park began, the state park was formed in earnest. It would be 40 years later, in 1966, that the dunes would garner protection on the federal level when the area that surrounded the state park became Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore, paving the way for the national park status later on.
Okay, so back to the Three Dune Challenge. So essentially, there is a little descent as we leave Mount Holden and head toward Mount Tom. A little bit of descent.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably the longest section, though, of the trail between peaks, and it's a welcome relief to head downhill for a bit.
Eventually, there is some leveling off of the dune, and again, as we head away from the peak, we dive back into deeper woodland. I'd be curious to know if the bald at the top of each peak that we had experienced at this point is more naturally occurring, or through the intervention of man, there was more of an impact on it, or if it's somehow a combination of both. I'd be curious about
that. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I'm wondering.
Because it definitely happened on both, all three of the peaks.
What was nice was that these like little wooded areas were fairly peaceful and quiet.
Yeah, the challenge is kind of a thing that people seriously go off on. And it is a fun challenge for sure. On this day, we were pushing ourselves, but we didn't have anything to compare or gauge to for ourselves. So we were just hiking kind of at our normal pace.
Or at our exhausted pace.
Sure.
Because this was already very exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like there were people who were actively participating, though, on the, like, you know, booking it between peaks, trying to make up their time. You know, there were people that were passing us occasionally.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep.
So eventually, after hiking through the woodland for some time, we come to a gigantic set of stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of a lovely reprieve, as Mount Tom is the tallest dune here.
That being said, we had just trudged up so much of the other two dunes. I think the reasoning that the stairs were there may have been because we had taken a major descent from Mount Holden and now had to climb all the way up Mount Tom. That's personally my opinion.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably true. And also at this point in time, it was nice to like have a different, you know,
surface
underneath our feet. Mm-hmm. So, and who doesn't love a good boardwalk?
Yeah.
So I was down.
Yeah. I mean, I know that's how you were feeling.
Like, I was down.
You were living for it.
Living.
You were like, I'm alive for boardwalk.
Mm-hmm. I was alive for boardwalk. I definitely got like a new like breath of energy.
Sure.
Coming to this boardwalk.
Yeah.
So as we get closer and closer to the peak of Mount Tom, there are some more boardwalk platforms up here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we run into a few folks. There was a group of some college-age folks that were at the top. And there were these two older gentlemen who we chatted with for a moment.
Yeah. They gave us some tips about things to do within the national park and also told us about some things to do within the state park, too, which we had already achieved on this day. It's always, though, like, you know, take the time to have a conversation with someone on the trail. We say it again and again, like, the human factor is wonderful. If you have the moment to take and can kind of engage someone, take it, because they were just so generous with their information, having been locals and having been to the park a lot. I just love that friendliness and that willingness to open up and share about a space that is so loved by locals or whomever,
yeah.
You know?
And if I remember right, they were from out of town,
mm-hmm,
as well.
Yeah, they were. But I think they had grown up around the dunes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at the peak of Mount Tom, we learned that it is indeed the tallest peak here at 192 feet, that the grade of the slope is 43 degrees, a considerably bigger grade from our initial hike up Mount Jackson, and that the dune itself contains 56 million cubic feet of sand.
Wow.
Yowza.
From the top, we can see Lake Michigan over some trees. It's not completely clear in view, but we're getting a nice sliver of the lake for sure. We also got a really nice view of the stairs that we would then have to descend.
Yeah, and I feel like we did that pretty quickly. And looking at the time when we had kind of come off the steps there, we had basically hiked most of this hike within 40 minutes.
40-minute time window.
Yeah, so we still had to hike a little bit more, but the majority of the grunt work was already sort of done.
We wound our way back and we got to the bottom. We ended up in the campground for the park. And as we were walking around the campground, we ended up locking steps with this woman who was staying at the park, whose first response upon seeing us was, "My God, the two of you are so sweaty."
It was like totally like brash and unasked for. And I'm like, uh-huh.
Oh, we were.
And we were.
Certainly were.
And we were.
The humidity was like 300%. And the sun had also, you know, decided to come out.
Yeah.
Was, you know,
yeah. I was glad we were heading west because nothing else on this road trip really equated humidity wise until we were back in the Smokies with this day. This
Agreed.
Was sort of like, oh Agreed. My God, this is going to be the whole time. And it was just dry heat west, which was
exactly.
great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that included like Theodore Roosevelt Glacier, Yellowstone, Grand Tetons, Badlands.
Yeah.
Mammoth Cave.
Yeah.
The Arch.
Yeah.
Gateway Arch.
The Arch.
The Arches. Not Arches, mm-mm. but the Gateway Arch.
We talked to her a little bit about the park and the national park and told her a little bit about what our trip was and what it was going to be. And I just remember her being like, good for you guys. Like, you know, do this while you can. But from here, we zipped our way along the campground road back to the Nature Center Trail to the parking lot where we promptly unloaded our bags but didn't take our boots off because our next stop for that afternoon was the national park.
Okay, so I think we should just put the whole thing on the Karen Stone scale.
Great.
The three dune challenge itself.
Great.
Not in separate pieces.
Okay, great.
So this was like an 8.5 for me.
I was going to say 7 for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. It's tough.
Yeah, it's definitely
tough.
It's not
easy.
It's short, though. It's tough, but short.
It's short, but it is...
deceptive.
It is a lot of grunts.
Yeah.
A lot of grunt work. Yeah, yeah. Like, heave, push yourself up some, you know, steep stuff.
Yeah.
So what is, so that is a 15 and a half out of 20 Karen Stones. And now, let's end this episode the way we end all of our episodes, with some Jeopardy-style trivia. All right, Mike, are you ready? Why don't I start today?
Okay, great.
So, my category is called... group of three before and after.
Oh, interesting.
Really?
I did a very similar group of three category. Oh. So we may have struck after
we
five
may.
Seasons.
In episode 99, finally
well,
writing the same category.
That
we'll
would,
see.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right. Do we want to do mine and see how it compares?
Sure, go for it.
All right. So for 100, these are the words that you say at the start of a race. And the performers who dance on bars who are still clothed but move in a provocative way.
What is ready, set, go-go boy?
Or go-go dancer.
Sure.
Correct. Yes. For 200, these three colors appear on the American flag. And this is the Kate Blanchett star turn that earned her an Academy Award.
What is red, right? What is red, white, and blue jasmine?
That's right. Mm-hmm. For 300, these are the three colors of the traffic light. And the piece of legislation written and proposed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
What is red, yellow, and green New Deal?
That is correct. Mm-hmm. And for 400, the title of a Western and the title of a series starring America Ferrera.
What is the good, the bad, and the ugly Betty?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And for 500.
Okay.
The first names of the three most talked about Bronte sisters, because there were five, and what Miranda Priestly says to Andrea before she asks for skirts from Calvin Klein in Devil Wears Prada.
Oh my God. I don't know the Brontes. I know Emily Bronte and that's about it. And then isn't it what kind of skirts is the...
No, she says this before she says skirts.
Emily? This is... what kind of skirts?
No, Emily. Emily.
I don't know.
Emily. Emily.
I don't know.
Emily, how many times do I have to scream your name?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the answer is... what is Anne Charlotte and Emily, Emily, yeah. How many times do I have
Emily,
to scream
Emily.
Your name?
Emily, Emily is a great...
Emily, Emily is a great band name.
Mm-hmm. Emily, Emily.
Okay, great.
Okay, great. Well, there we go.
And what is your...
okay, so I actually wrote today. Seven here, because there's some that are tougher, and it's called Three's a Crowd. So what's going to happen is I'm going to give you some clues, and you are going to have to name the group of three based off of those clues. They'll typically be one-word clues. Sometimes it might be a group of something. For example, like Huey, Louie, and Dewey. You might have to name that, or you might say, like, another way to answer could be Scrooge McDuff's nephews.
Nephews.
Like, so it's going to be both ways. Like,
sure.
Both ways. Okay?
Okay.
So... and some might have three in the answer. It might be like the three blah, blah, blah.
Got it.
Okay. So for 100, monuments, Nile, Sphinx.
What are, well, they're all in Egypt.
Right. But think about the last one. It's nearest to these items. They are monuments. The Nile is near and so is the Sphinx.
They're all near the three great pyramids?
Yeah, the three pyramids of Giza.
Oh, the three pyramids of Giza. Yeah. Okay.
Jefferson... Philadelphia, Declaration. So I'm looking for a three-word phrase here.
Sorry, my brain is jumping because you're giving clues in a list of three and also asking for a group of three.
Yes, sometimes, yes.
Okay, well, it's Philadelphia. It's something about Philadelphia.
Focus more on the last one, the Declaration.
Of Independence?
Mm-hmm. So a three-word phrase. From the Declaration of Independence.
What is we the people?
No. What is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. For 300, Danson, Selleck, and Gutenberg. I'm looking for two movies.
Oh, what is Three Men and a Baby and Three Men and a Little Lady?
Great. Athos, Porthos, Aramis.
No, nothing.
D'Artagnan.
Oh, what are the Three Musketeers?
There you go. Fellowship, Tower, King.
What are the Fellowship of the Ring, the Two Towers, and the Return of the King, the Lord of the Rings trilogy?
There we go. Caspar, Melchior, Balthazar.
Who are the three wise men or the three magi?
Mm-hmm.
Or the three kings?
And lastly, for
there is a
oh, it's cutting me off.
I'm cutting you off because I sang a I was in a class once, and it was an opera workshop class where we had to sing these scenes from opera.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one about called the Magi or the Three Magi or something mm-hmm. like that. And it was done on television,
mm-hmm.
but one of them. I had to sing the guy that sang, this is my box. This is my box. I never travel without my box. Anyway, mm-hmm. there you go.
Thank you.
Then that wasn't sung well, mm-hmm. but yeah, there you are.
And for 700, this one is really tricky. So,
okay.
Al-Nilhlam, Montana, and I think Montana might have auto-corrected when I wrote that. Well, we'll go with it, and somebody can come for me in the comments about it. Al-Nilhlam, Montana, Al-Natak. I want you to think about a constellation.
Oh, are these three stars in the constellation?
Of?
Orion.
That's right. What part? Oh,
what part?
Yeah.
The belt?
That's right.
Great.
Where are the belts for this outfit?
Why is no one ready? This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. To find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram, on our website, and in the Gaze Shop is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang. This episode was edited by me, Dustin Ballard.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as Middlesex County, New Jersey.